Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Investigating the Post Office Scandal. After a short summer break, we're back with some more exciting post office related content, it says here. My name is Rebecca Thompson. I wrote the first published article about the post office scandal in 2009 when I was working for Computer Weekly.
It is exciting post office related content. My name is Nick Wallace. Hello, I wrote a book called The Great Post Office Scandal. In this episode, we're going to be talking to a new-ish sub-postmaster called John O'Sullivan from Borough Wash Post Office in South Derbyshire. John has spent more than 25 years working in his partner's post office, but has since April been elevated to the role of sub-postmaster without being interviewed. John is an interesting person. He's very much invested in what went wrong during the Post Office Horizon IT scandal, and he regularly sends emails to Nick Reed, the Post Office Chief Executive, Callum Greenhow, the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters Chief Executive, and he makes a lot of Freedom of Information requests to the Post Office, some of which grub up very useful information.
During Nick's discussion with John, they spoke about how John became a sub-postmaster whilst he was walking his dog, John's childhood as a Jehovah's Witness, and his support for sub-postmasters caught up in the post office scandal.
I started by asking John about his recent elevation to public office.
Yes, that was extremely curious. Marcia has been a postmaster since 1996.
And Marcia's your partner?
Marcia's my partner, yeah. And she would pass an interview with most organisations. I probably wouldn't. So I've worked in the post office with her. But then following the change in circumstances that COVID brought about, our post office turnover on the retail side exceeded the VAT threshold. So we had to become VAT registered. And that led to a change of entity audit from the Post Office Limited, which entailed some people turning up to make sure that the money we said was in the till was in the till, and that we were competent, I suppose. Marcia had already decided I wasn't to be present for the interview. And on the strength of that, a new contract was issued, although, of course, it wasn't issued because it's the post office. We signed something online, but no paperwork was presented that morning. I went out for a walk with the dog. When I came back, there was a car parked diagonally blocking our drive, which I took to be only one thing, the presence of a post office auditor. The other auditor had parked in the co-op car park next door, not blocking the street or the pavement, but just typical of confrontational attitude that post office auditors used to do, and clearly in April 2022 were still doing. I didn't get involved in having to speak to them or, as I say, sign any documents, because post office contracts, people don't get you signing stuff. The first auditor, who'd been an auditor for 38 years, so he'd been there all the time of the Horizon stuff. He was only there for about an hour. He had to go to look at a robbery that had already taken place the day before in Nottingham, but he just felt it was his duty to swing by and see us for reasons that he's never explained. When he left, the second auditor said to Marcia, "Oh, well," he said, "I'm not like," which quite why one post office auditor would think he needed to explain he's different to one that's just left will be something that perhaps Sir Wynne will be able to uncover. But be it in May, April, I became a sub-postmaster. Another remarkable thing that happened in April, over the last 2 or 3 years, I've been in fairly regular correspondence with the CEO of the NFSP, Callum Greenhill, all the while I was not a sub-postmaster. But as soon as I became a sub-postmaster, Callum has never replied or returned any messages or questions I've asked him, which just strikes me as very strange.
It's very strange. You've had an interesting year then. Just take me through the audit, the reason for the audit as stated. Was it just a random audit on your sub-post office?
Marcia got a phone call from a lady saying that we would need to be audited.
And what was the reason given for the need for the audit?
It was a change of status. Marcia had been a sole trader, yeah, Borough Wash Post Office. And now we were a partnership, that registered partnership. watch that post nonsense.
I've got you.
So
it's change of status. Change of status triggers an audit, and within that partnership that is now running the post office, does one of you have to be designated the actual title of sub postmaster?
No, it appears we both.
You are joint sub postmasters.
Well, yes. So, which begs the question: if the till were short, who would be liable for that? But you know, let's not go there. The things that happened surrounding this were quite remarkable. Marcy had already received a phone call from the junior auditor, as we later learned to be, to confirm what Tasey was coming and what he needed to do. He was due on a Friday.
This is back in April.
The week he was due, Royal Mail came on the Tuesday to say, we understand your last day of trading is Thursday. Do you want the box still left outside? And Marcy said, what do you mean our last day of trading is Thursday?
And what's a box?
Well, it's a post box. Most post offices have a large post box outside.
Right.
The post box belongs to Post Office Limited or Royal Mail as now, but it's on our land. Sometimes when people convert a post office into a residential, they don't want the box there.
So Royal Mail thought you were closing down?
Well, Royal Mail had been told that Thursday, the day before the audit, was our last day of trading.
And what it was, in fact, was the last day of Marcia trading as a sole trader.
Exactly. So Marcia rang the post office lady who'd been organising, for lack of a better word, the whole audit process. And she said, Royal Mail have just told me that Thursday's my last day. Do you know in advance that I'm going to fail this audit? Got no reply to that phone call, which, again, is what you'd expect. So these two people turned up on the Friday. I was intentionally absent. I wasn't required. I didn't need to be seen. I didn't need to sign any paperwork. And from there, we just carried on as always. Marcia is far more knowledgeable about the back office procedures and stuff.
So Marcia signed the partnership paperwork on your behalf or on the partnership's behalf, which now means that you can give yourself the title of postmaster despite not having been interviewed for it?
Yes. Both of us gave electronic signatures on the post office easy to use become a postmaster webpage.
Right. So when did you find out that you'd been approved, or did you not even need to be approved?
I didn't even need to know I'd been approved.
This is very different from the process that's been outlined to me by several sub-postmasters in the past, where they'd have to go for interviews.
Well, I've spoken to a couple of sub-postmasters about it, and one of them suggested it wasn't even a necessary process at all, and it could possibly be the post office just trying to fire a warning shot across my specific bowels, because of some of the activities I've been involved in trying to get questions from the
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, but let me just pick this apart so I've got this straight in my own mind. You decided that for business reorganisation purposes, you needed to run the post office as a limited liability partnership rather than Marcia as a sole trader.
Now, specifically, we'd hit the people with all the supermarkets closed and so on, and people not wanting to do this, we hit the VAT threshold. So we had to become VHH, so we had to become a partnership. And someone at the post office decided that was a change of a status, isn't the word? There's a specific expression, forgive me. Change of entity.
Right. Okay. There's a change of entity now running your post office. You needed an audit. But what I'm not clear about, and that all makes sense, but what I'm not clear about is how Marcia's role as sub-postmaster has changed or transformed into something that allows you to call yourself a sub-postmaster as well.
Indeed. And no one would be able to answer that question for you, I don't think. It just is. So, for instance, that happened, I think, on the 8th of April. At the end of April, when we received our pay, it was £1,000, not £4,000. So Marcia rang post office to say, I've just had my pay for April. I only got a week's pay. And in the same way that Royal Mail believed that Thursday was our last day trading, Post Office Limited believed that Thursday was Marcia's last day trading, so she only got paid a week's pay. She made further inquiries with human resources. Oh, from the Friday after your audit, you have a new HR number and pay number. So there was a further £3,000 sitting in another account.
Which would go to the limited liability partnership.
Which was Marcia and Ed.
Got you.
But again, just so no joined up. No, once, you know. And for a brief moment, Marcia thought we'd done a month's pay for £800.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And just to get me absolutely straight, how is it that you can now call yourself a sub-postmaster? How is it that you are a sub-postmaster?
Because the post office told us, having achieved the VAT threshold on turnover, we needed to have a change of entity, and in no longer being Marcia as a sole trader, as a postmaster, we were Borough Rough Post Office, VAT registered partnership. And so I had to fill in an online application form, which I electronically signed. Two auditors came along, conducted an audit. They didn't need to speak to me. I didn't need to sign any paperwork. And I am now a sub-postmaster.
Well, the very heartiest congratulations to you, John. Just tell us a little bit about your post office then. It sounds like you're thriving.
Certainly 2 years ago we were, because everyone was so pleased that we were open and we were part of the community, and we would do an hour a day for the vulnerable. If I can just elaborate on that briefly. We decided we'd open at 8 o'clock in the morning so that people who were frightened, concerned, or perhaps were looking after people who would be at risk. We would just open in the hour, we'd cleanse after every customer, but it meant I'd need to open the shop an hour early, which meant I needed to open the safe an hour early. So I contacted Post Office Limited and I said, look, we're going to offer this for the vulnerable and the concerned. And they said, oh, that's okay. We'll have to change the opening time on your safe. That will cost £160. And I said, you're joking. They said, no, there's a call out. If you want to adjust the times on your safe equipment, that's a cost. So I said, oh, okay. I said, well, let me go away and talk to a few people. You talk to some people and see if you really want to publicise the fact that if branches want to alter the hours so they can provide a service for vulnerable people, you will charge them what will effectively be £320, because obviously at some point it will stop and we need to put the safe back. Anyway, 2 or 3 days later, the post office said they would waive the fee.
These little victories are very important, aren't they, John? I'm looking at an image of your post office now on Google Maps. So you are in Derbyshire.
Well, I mean, we're in South Derbyshire. I have to say it's a very pleasant location. It is an affluent location. There's lots of people in this part of Derby work at either the airport, Rolls-Royce, Bombardier. These companies seem to want to try and recruit from within families, and they do seem to try and keep people. And there's quite a lot of word of mouth recruitment goes on. They look after people, which is nice. And I suppose if you can get a recommendation to come and work for you, that might save you a bit of money in the long run anyway. So we have a fish market. I'll be honest with you, the last month, the Nationwide has pulled out.
Right. Of Borough Wash.
Of Borough Wash. Borough Wash Hardware, who was going for 40 years, he's literally finishing the end of the month. But we have a fishmongers, we have a proper butchers. It's amazing. I came from Maidenhead, a prosperous place down
in
south.
In Berkshire, yeah.
Berkshire, 100,000. Well, you went to first class school.
Well, I've got to call her Margaret Thatcher then. It's Theresa May's constituency.
Theresa May, yes. I've met her a couple of times. A lamppost with a blue ribbon on would win.
And apparently did.
The Liberal Democrats always do well as a protest
right
in the locals, but they can't throw off the shackles, I'm afraid. It's a nice area. We've got a lovely big 5 double-bed old house, which was lovely for the children. There were 4 pubs in the village. There were 2 or 3 schools. We could walk the children in the mornings. So when we moved here, we had 4 children aged 5 and
wow.
under. And so as a lifestyle, it was going to be perfect. We'd be the village place. It's a very quick way of getting to know people, being the village
place. Yeah, and you're right next door to the church and the bus stop, I can see from this.
Well, the church are perfect neighbours. They don't have any bells.
It's a very good point. Yeah.
They have a very nice wall that they repair to a very high standard. I can't the ladies there make this most wonderful cakes, and they're just nice people.
Well, listen, as I say, congratulations on becoming a sub-postmaster. I know you've worked with Marcia for many, many years. But I do have to ask, I mean, one of the reasons we are in contact is because you are alert to and not afraid of articulating the failings of the post office, particularly when it comes to serving sub-postmasters, but also with regard to the Horizon IT scandal. What is it that made you think, well, okay, this is still a business that I want to keep investing in to the extent that I'm actually going to become a sub-postmaster myself and put myself on the front line?
To be honest with you, if we hadn't simply accepted the need to do the change of status order, I think Marcia may well have had to reapply to be a sub-postmaster on her own. And that would have required a new business plan. And I'm not sure you could write a credible one anymore.
That's really interesting. So,
because they would want 5-year figures.
So your decision to go in this direction wasn't because you think things are going to be going thumpingly well over the next 5 years. It's just that you're happy to tick on as you are.
I'm certainly in my early 60s. I certainly don't need a full-time job. One of the problems is that historically sub-postmasters, when you'd had enough of the Great British Public or the Post Office Limited, you could sell your thriving business on and downsize to a smaller location. And I think that was always going to be our plan, but I'm not sure you could get any money for a post office nowadays.
That seems to be echoed by a number of people I've spoken to, which is obviously a terrible shame, because many people who went into the business puts a lot of money down to take it over in the first instance.
It's something that I was discussing with someone actually only yesterday. So the post office and the government, quite rightly, are going to have to compensate people that they wrongly prosecuted, imprisoned. You know, compensating people is not simply, we took this money from you because we said you'd stolen it and we're giving it you back. Well, that's not compensating them at all, is it? We shouldn't have taken this money off you and we're giving you back, but you actually need to put them into a better position. So for the people who've had post offices for 3 years, 5, 10 years, who the promised business that was going to be put their way, this front of government that simply never materialized, the post office pay for sub-postmasters last year, ending April 2022, without being adjusted for inflation, was less than sub-postmasters got in 2013. So over decades, hundreds of millions of pounds of pay to sub-postmasters has simply not been paid. My pay for the month just gone, July, was £4 more than in 2019. So in that 3-year period, my energy bills, minimum wage, cost of purchasing stock has absolutely rocketed. The amount I charge customers for posting mails has increased, and I got £1 a week more.
Goodness me. I can imagine it's a bone of contention. I'm really intrigued by you, John, as a person, because I mean you've been incredibly supportive of my work, and I'm deeply grateful to you for that. But you're also very active in terms of grubbing up information for your own interest, and I see a lot of the fruits of that. You wage a very significant FOI campaign. You're in contact, or you were in contact, with Callum Greenhow, the chief executive of the NFSP, and I know that you've also written to Nick Reed, the CEO of the Post Office. I wonder what it is that motivates you. What is it that allows you to put yourself in the firing line in this way, and try and get answers to questions that a lot of other people are trying to get, but plough your own furrow in doing so.
I'll be honest with you. I think it's because of where my dad and his dad came from. My actual family are all from Kerry, Southwest Ireland. And there's a long history down there of not liking authority, certainly challenging authority, and a bit of cussedness. My grandfather was part of the Irish Civil War in the 20s, and he was involved in the Michael Collins killing. Trouble is, you see, if I call it assassination, it would give a political slant, and if you call it a killing, I certainly wouldn't call it a murder. But yet,
the question that I would ask is how involved?
Well, some people think he pulled the trigger. Some people think he steadied the rifle.
Wow.
So very involved. Many people saw Michael Collins as a traitor. De Valera cleverly didn't go to England to sign the treaty agreement. He got Collins to. Collins was very popular in Cork, but he wasn't very popular in Kerry. My grandmother thought he was brilliant. We've got our free state at last. My grandfather thought it was a betrayal. And that's how the Civil War started. Some Irish people wanted a united Ireland, and some Irish people were pragmatic enough to believe at least we've got this. And I think lots of Kerry people just like a bit of a scratch.
So you learnt all this at your father's knee, the anti-authoritarian and the desire to challenge authority.
My father wouldn't talk about the Troubles, not in the same way that lots of Irish people would call it the Troubles. I can remember the day I was there when the Miami Show Band got murdered in 1975. And you just thought, what possibly could you achieve by killing a load of travelling musicians in a bus? But no, my father got religion in a very bad way. He went from being a Roman Catholic to being a Jehovah's Witness. And I'm not sure which party should be more aggrieved, but he never spoke about what grandfather did.
But what did he imbue you with?
He's still alive. My dad is 93. He retired in 1987, as he used to work for BOHC. He backed the wrong balls. He believed the Jehovah's Witnesses was a good thing. He came to England in 1959, 60. His wife, my mum Joan, followed him with Marcus, my brother. And she just stuck with him. She loved him. I don't think she particularly believed in Jehovah's Witnesses. I was brought up as one for a number of years, and you just assume that whatever your mum and dad are doing, everyone else does, and it was the right thing. So I'd stand on doorsteps with the Watchtower awake. I don't mean to be disrespectful to my dad. He made a choice. And going to a school, never having birthdays, never having Christmas presents, not being allowed to take part in sport, it was competitive. I used to wait until after prayers were said in assembly, and I'd have to go in, 600 people would turn to look, and I used to get detentions because my form tutor knew that I didn't go into assembly for religious reasons, but other teachers would give me detentions for being late. And when I said to them, I'm not late, it's just I don't take part in the religious side of it, I just get detention for answering back. So it was, I don't know, it made me very resentful because I thought I was doing what God wanted me to do. And then you reach an age and you just think, do you know what, this is all about. And I don't know why I was doing it. And it made me angry. So I think when I see large organisations doing things that they really don't believe in themselves, but it's difficult for people to challenge what's going on or to question it, it strikes a chord with me of my mum, 40, 50, 60 years of being a Jehovah's Witness when she probably didn't want to be, but she stuck with her man, which is just as good as love can get. And I think of my brother and I, who had a difficult time. We didn't fit in at school because we never went to parties or anything. And we were kind of looked down our noses on a bit in the witnesses because, you know, my dad was a former manual worker who'd come from Kerry. And, you know, although I went to a recent school, the world was going to end in 1975. So we didn't need to get well educated because it won't matter.
Goodness me. So when did you first hear about the post office scandal?
That probably was 2018 when I read something that Nick Wallace, journalist, was going to be covering a court case. And I got interested in that. And there was the opportunity to be able to help out and get someone there to be our eyes and ears for crowdfunding. So I'm more than happy to do that. I think it represents terrific value. So started listening to the reading the transcripts, and I'd known of people who'd been prosecuted. Marcia's father, David Charteris Whiting, former naval architect, he used to train people on the counters, and he was used by the post office to go into branches with unexplained losses or suspected chicanery. And I'm talking 1990s now, up until 2005. And Marcia and I both worked at the time. So we said, David, would you like to be the sub-postmaster? He said, he'd love to. He said, he's always had his eye on that post office. He quite liked it. The post office turned down our application because they said David didn't have the right qualities. He wasn't sales-oriented enough to be a sub-postmaster.
This is someone who'd worked behind the counter of several post
currently
offices.
Worked. They sent him in, yeah. So
as a trusted pair of hands for when other sub-postmasters had been suspended.
Yeah. So I said, well, we're going to have a chat, I think. And then I found out that the person who turned David down had been trained by David himself and didn't like David. David used to work for post office in Windsor Castle. They had a switchboard there. So David would get phone calls on his switchboards from princes who needed to make phone calls at strange times of the day and could be quite demanding, you know, when you've had a busy time flying your helicopter and had a couple of sherries, you can be quite rude to non-important people. Diana used to walk down with the princes and get them to buy some stamps and post them. And David, he was a gentleman. He was a bit pompous. He used to direct bridge tournaments. He fitted into the establishment, but he wasn't everyone's cup of tea. Anyway, this contracts manager said, no, if you're going to have David as the postmaster, we're not going to let you have it. And I said, okay. I said, well, David's currently running a post office for you in Maidenhead, isn't he? Grenfell Road? Yes, he is. I said, well, I can tell you now, if he's not good enough to run Spencer's Lane post office, he was not good enough to run Grenfell. So what we can do, two post offices can shut the same day. Making it, and then you can explain to the advertiser why you didn't think he was good enough. So I suppose I called his bluff, and so they let David be down as the sub postmaster. But that's just another example of the pettiness and the personalities that can make huge decisions based on just dislike.
Yeah, and they had the power to do that, and I think that there was a huge amount of prejudice against sub postmasters as a class within the post office, which I only really started to see over the period of covering the trial and the prejudice that came out against sub-postmasters in the documents that were around at that time. So
you famously have an example in your wonderful book, which I'm grateful to Bath Publishing for helping you get out there. Postmasters are bent coppers and failed bookies. And I made a Freedom of Information request to the post office asking them, one of your senior people suggests that post offices are largely inhabited by failed coppers and bent bookies. Can you say what percentage of them fit these demographics? And they turned that Freedom of Information request down, which I thought was a bit unfair.
But I mean, this is the thing that I find very interesting about you, John, in that obviously I've got a lot of contacts amongst the sub-postmaster community who are interested in the work that I'm doing. But you go and do your own work. You go and do your own investigations, whether it's talking directly to senior executives or putting in multiple FOI requests. What are you hoping to do?
I get frustrated. It's not been that many. It's been 80.
80. Okay, 80. That's probably more than I've sent in.
I do ask myself that. And it's funny, I was talking to a police officer. We've got some very nice pubs around this area. And there was one gentleman who, I think he's retired now. But I said to him, can you tell me what you know about PACE 1984?
This is the Police and Criminal Evidence Act 1984.
It's mainly to do with the fact that it's not just the police can bring prosecutions, the RSPCA can, customs officers can, all sorts of people, but there are a standardised set of rules that you all have to follow. You simply can't make it up. So one of the specific things was I've noticed the punishments that are handed out by magistrates. It did seem to me that Asian sub-postmasters got dealt a stiffer sentence than white postmasters. And so to try and find that out, I'd asked the post office if they recorded the ethnicity of the people they were prosecuting. And eventually they answered to say, no, it wasn't necessary. Now, the NFSP, Callum's National Federation of Sub-Postmasters. They are just another arm of the post office.
Yeah, and anyone new to this podcast, we ought to explain actually very briefly that the NFSP used to be the Postmasters Union and has now reverted to being a trade association. So they no longer have a general secretary, but a CEO. And since they stopped taking subs, they are, as you say, entirely funded by the post office.
They are. So earlier this year, a new little site appeared, a new page appeared on their website, and it was their slant of horizon. And they said one of the reasons why we were unable to help sub-postmasters as much as we wanted in the Horizon scandal was these interviews were carried out under PACE 1984 conditions, which meant we were unable to comment. We could only sit as a representative. And I've spoken to three police officers, all of them very high ranked, and all of them have said that's complete rubbish. PACE 1984 does not prevent anyone from making representation on behalf of the person that's being interviewed. And so I've asked the post office. NFSP say that they carried out the PACE 1984. You say that they weren't because you didn't need to record the ethnicity. Who is giving the correct answer to this question? And they haven't replied to that. And I say, as I mentioned, Callum hasn't replied to me since April because there's an awful lot of curious stuff on their web page. I've asked him if he's taken legal advice about the stuff he's posted up. He refused to answer. For the last 3 years, I've been asking where the NFSP gets their legal advice from, because my concern is if you're using the same company the post office are using, then you're going to get identical advice to the post office, unless the lawyers that in that company are so clever that they give conflicting advice to two people who may arguably be in conflict with each other, although of course that's not the case. I get frustrated when credible UK organisations spend sums of money to do smoke screens and deceit and misunderstand questions, or, you know, It really annoys me.
Well, I'd be very interested in seeing
but
that.
The policeman I was asked.
Yeah, I would just be very interested in seeing that statement by the NFSP about not being able to intervene.
I can send you that. But the policeman, he said to me, he said, John, I can see that this is really annoying you and making you angry. He said, but where do you want to go with
Well, that's my question as well.
Do you want to see people in jail? And do you know what? I would absolutely love it if some senior people in the post office had, I feel sorry for their children, but for their children to have to send Pippa the pony back, have to stop going to blue coat school and go to an ordinary school, get rid of one of the second homes because dad or mum has been found liable for fraud, dishonesty, malfeasance, an affront to the public conscience. It's about time people in this country were held liable for what they've done. A poor single mum who steals a packet of nappies will lose her benefits for 3 years. A multi-millionaire who forgets he's paid off his mortgage, nothing happens to him. Heads of audit firms that lie, they're not liable. They still have their big homes and their lifestyle. And I don't begrudge wealth. I know lots of very, very wealthy people who are delightful. But it's the scrutiny that ordinary people are put under. And I'm not saying for trivial offences, but for instance, so we'd have to write a business plan, and the post office would say, that business plan won't stand up. But the post office didn't have to write a business plan for the prosecuting of sub-postmasters, for the funding of the High Court litigation, for getting Lord Grabner in to say that Justice Fraser was a wrong'un, and the scrutiny that they should have been put under by the government is completely non-existent.
That was John O'Sullivan, Joint Sub-Postmaster for Borough Wash Post Office in Derbyshire. That's it from us for this episode. Don't forget, if you'd like to follow our intermittent writings on the Post Office scandal, Nick's website is postofficescandal.uk.
And you can sign up to Rebecca's free Substack email newsletter by searching Rebecca Thompson Substack. And remember, there's no P in Thompson, or not in this one, anyway.
It's the correct way to spell it. Thanks for listening to Investigating the Post Office Scandal. Please like and subscribe on Spotify, Audioboom, or Apple Podcasts to ensure the next episode reaches you whilst it's still warm.
Thanks to Whistledown Productions for their advice and support. This podcast is recorded, produced, and edited by Rebecca Thompson and Nick Wallace. We'll be back with more very soon.
See you next time, and don't forget to subscribe. Bye.
Goodbye.